This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Just Women, our weekly talk show hosted by women, for women and with three amazing guests. But remember, we are not just women. We are definitely so much more. I'm Anne Twist and today I'm joined by the lovely Mandy Dineley to tell you who we are going to be chatting with on today's show.
Hi Anne, lovely to be here again. Today we're going to be talking about dance fitness with Antonia Bradley, finding out about a new personalised wedding magazine with Liz Gatherer, and hearing about a new novel called Leaving the Village from writer Helen Matthews. These three great guests, as usual, to take us up to the news at 2 o'clock.
Thanks, Mandy. They all sound really interesting. We're going to wish it was a two-hour show, I think, today. So welcome to our first guest, Antonia Bradley of Surrey Dance Fitness. Antonia, could you sort of first of all provide the listeners with a little bit of info on what you do and where you do it?
So we provide a variety of dance fitness classes in and around Farnham in Surrey, obviously. They're all community-based classes. And you kind of train for those separately from something like Les Mills or the sports centre type classes. So we have Zumba, Fitsteps, Clubsize, Vera Flow, House Fitness. And they're all completely dance-based classes, not anything like gym classes or boot camp.
Right. And how long have you been involved in it? Or you're a partner, I think, aren't you?
I am. I met Kate 8 years ago when I was really fat and unfit. I had just come back to fitness after having my children, and I thought I'd better do something with myself. So I went to a fitness class, met Kate. I absolutely loved the class. I almost felt emotional about it. So I really got into it, started doing it 3 times a week, virtually straight away from nothing. And then Kate encouraged me to train to become a Zumba instructor, which I did. And that, there was a little bit of a time limit on that because it was approaching her 40th birthday and she wanted cover for her class. So I had 3 weeks to train, learn a whole class, then get up and teach.
Oh,
so
wow.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Did that, then launched my own classes and I've been doing it ever since.
And was it, I think, originally called Farnham Zumba?
Farnham Zumba. Yeah. So we were the Zumba girls. We still are the Zumba girls. But because we offer a lot more now.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And did you have to change it because of the license for Zumba or something? Is that right? Or
Yes. Legally, we couldn't be Farnham Zumba anymore because we were offering the other brands, because
right.
They're all separate brands.
Okay.
So we could only be Farnham Zumba if we were only offering Zumba, but we had expanded to offer the different brands.
Yeah.
So we had to change, and we did get a bit stuck there. And we had a bit of a time limit as well because we had Zumba legal on our case because we were all over social media and websites and things like that. So we tried Farnham Dance Fitness, but it clashed with other dance schools. So we went for Surrey Dance Fitness.
I wonder
why
that was.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what sort of classes do you do other than Zumba? Because I know I can see that you do lots of other classes.
Yep.
So can you give us a rundown on a few of them that are slightly more unusual?
Well, we've got a new one that we're launching quite soon, actually, called House Fitness. But it's spelled a bit funny. So it's H-A-U-2.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. So strange.
House Fitness. And it's based around house music. There's funky house, deep house, and hard house. So it's for all us ex-clubbers, really.
I thought that was what Clubbersize was for.
Yeah, well, that's the same as well. So Clubbersize is around 90s clubbing music, although that includes a bit more current dance music as well now, because obviously it just expands all the time. And the house is split into the different types. So the deep house is much more of a conditioning class. A funky house is more of a dance and combat style class.
Okay.
So then you mix them together and that becomes hard house.
Hardcore house.
Yeah.
I like the sound of that.
Okay. Actually.
Yeah.
Then we have Strong by Zumba, which is a bit like a HIIT, which is high intensity interval training. A bit more of your boot camp style, I guess, but still to music, still dancey. We have Fitsteps, which is around sort of ballroom, Latin. There's the cha-cha-cha and things like that. We have Vera Flow, which is a stretch dance class. So it's it's a little bit like Pilates and yoga, but with a dance to it.
Oh.
So you're holding different stretches. Oh. It's amazing, absolutely amazing. I love doing it. I don't teach that one. Kate teaches that, and Tina. We have five instructors working
with us now.
Yeah. So, and that way you do end up doing some floor work, whereas most of our classes are all upright because
high
you're
energy,
dancing.
Yeah.
Vera Flow, you do end up doing some floor work, and you honestly feel there's some meditation bit at the end, 5 minutes sort of meditation. And you feel like you've had a massage at the end of that class.
Brilliant.
It's amazing.
So what about the one that you do with the lights off and you've got all these bright lights?
Yeah, is that clubber-size.
Have you not tried that?
Yes.
Oh, it's brilliant.
So that's what it is, clubber-size.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was doing at the time.
Yeah, clubber-size. It's in the dark with disco lights and you have a pair of flashing glow sticks in your hands. So you can use them almost like drumsticks, or you use them to... It encourages you to actually do more arm work as well, because otherwise people can tend to sort of hold their arms down and just concentrate on footwork. But I think people like that because they can hide in the dark.
Yeah, I definitely.
Totally agree. That's one of the reasons why I loved it.
Actually, it's really interesting about dance classes. So you always get the people that are shy that go and stand at the back. But, of course, as an instructor, when you look out, you immediately look out across the back row. So that's where the instructor looks. But so actually, this is a hint for everybody. If you want to hide, always stand in the front row, far right or far left.
I'll tell you what, I always go to the back. And it's not because I want to hide. It's because I want to watch the people in front of me to make sure that I'm doing it right.
Right.
Particularly sometimes because the instructor's facing you.
Yeah.
So I would rather copy the person in front of me. I have to find someone who's doing it right, because that's not a given, really, is it?
But it's really difficult, isn't it, if you're at the back and then the whole class turns around and you're at the front.
Yeah.
And you don't know what you're doing.
That's true.
That happened to me recently.
Yeah.
Now, that was scary.
Yeah.
What's bounce?
Yeah.
Bounce, that's more of a sort of a bit more hip-hop.
Okay.
Yeah, a bit more hip-hop.
And do you do everything? Obviously, you've got five instructors now, but what do you do?
I just teach Zumba.
Okay.
I did teach clubber-size for a while as well, but because I've got another full-time job and two kids and a family, real life.
Yeah.
and I felt I was spending too many evenings away from my children, because the busiest classes really are in the evenings,
after
and also
work.
It conflicts with jobs.
Mm, yeah.
And when my son was doing GCSEs and my daughter was sort of coming up to nearly secondary school, I just felt that I needed to be at home more, and I couldn't just keep going out every evening.
No.
And it's always, the classes are always sort of seven-ish, which is kind of, that's a busy time in a family.
Yeah.
It can be.
Yeah.
Sort of approaching bedtime.
I was going to ask, actually, I think we touched on this earlier. I've only done Kate's classes. Kate, without fail, turns up, huge smile on the face, high energy, and I sort of go sporadically. I go when I feel like it. Where if you're a teacher, you've got to turn up with a smile on your face and get on with it. I mean, how do you maintain that?
I guess anyone who's customer facing, you can do that. You can do that turning up with a smile on your face. It doesn't. It kind of, you just have to do it. And actually, once you get there, and you start talking to people, and we've really built a gorgeous, gorgeous community of lovely women, and actually a couple of men, but mainly women. So they've become friends. Some of them have become friends, but also it's not at all cliquey. So you turn up, and actually, if I have had a bad time or whatever, I'm quite honest and open. I'm a real person, so I will just say, you know, my child's just done this or whatever.
Yeah.
And then once the music starts, and you kind of just get on with it.
Yeah.
So it's like a performance. Really,
it is. It is.
You're on stage.
It is.
And you're often, aren't you? So
yeah. I do sometimes feel a bit of a dance robot, because quite often you can't really remember what move you're supposed to be doing, but your body kind of just does it. And you think, that's lucky, because my mind might have wandered off onto something else. And I think the other thing is, because it's not my full-time job, I just think that actually, if I wasn't running the class, there are plenty of Monday evenings where I would actually just stay at home and have a glass of wine.
Yeah. Which must be tempting.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can't, I don't. And once I'm there, I just love it. It doesn't matter what mood you're in or what horrific day you've had, that music starts and you can just go with it.
Yeah,
because the music's a really important part of the class, isn't it? And that actually, you just get taken away with it, don't you?
Yeah.
So the music makes such a difference. Do you have fun choosing the music?
Yeah, it's a bit of pressure sometimes. And then, and sometimes you do a class and you do the playlist, and halfway through you think, oh no, there might be two songs that are quite similar. And because there's different styles of music, this gets a bit technical here. So with Zumba, you've got reggaeton, salsa, cumbia, belly dance, African, all these different things. And sometimes I'll think I've put two songs that I really like in, and then realise they're a similar dance. But, you know, they you just go with it. You just go with the music. The funniest thing is trying to sing them, because a lot of them are in Spanish.
You're not obliged to sing along there, are you?
No, I just laugh a lot.
But I did wonder, though, actually, because obviously you do an hour's class, normally an hour, I think.
Yeah.
How much prep for an hour's class? Or do you just turn up with your music and...
Well, now, I get asked this sometimes, how do you remember everything? And I think if I look over the years, how many songs I've actually done and are somewhere within my memory bank, there's got to be a few hundred. But there's 17 songs in a class, roughly.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and they don't change every week.
No.
And you will put a new one or two in every week.
Yeah.
So... the main thing about learning the tracks is playing the music, so you know the music. Because they're all music-led, you just have to literally have that song on, absolutely, so you know exactly what's going to change.
So every week, if you're playing, let's say you play a song this week and next week, would it be the same moves to that track each time you play that track? Okay, so you're not making it up as you go along in terms of moves to song?
No, actually, that's another thing. So a lot of them, you are given the choreography to the songs, or you can make up your own choreography, but there's also a sequence to the way the moves are.
Right.
And so all the tracks that I do are set choreography, so I will learn that choreography, and so that song will always be the same every week.
Okay.
And my playlist will pretty much, it will change every week, but there will only be one or two new ones.
Okay.
Maybe a few old ones. But I won't change the whole playlist every week, because it takes people a while to learn them.
Yeah.
And if you keep changing them, you just can't get into the rhythm, and you can't get a workout. And it's you know, as well as being there for fun and for dancing and everything else, it's really important that they come away sweating and maybe aching the next day a little bit.
But actually feeling that they've been able to do the moves, because they've done them before, and this week they built on what they learnt last week.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's important too. Yeah. Mm,
and they can feel that they've achieved a little bit more. And you know, people that are wearing Fitsteps, you get a little bit, there's a bit of a challenge there on how many steps. Did I say Fitsteps?
Fitbits.
Fitsteps is one of your classes.
You know, they really get a bit competitive about how many steps or how many calories they've burnt in a class, and whose class burns the most calories, and all this goes on. And it's interesting.
I never thought about that.
And you can say to people, so how much did you burn? And then you look at the person at the back, and how much did you burn? But not everyone wants to get involved in that. But the ones that do, you know, they
get competitive, I'm sure.
Yeah.
We were going to talk to you about your event that's coming up.
Yes.
We must make sure we allow some time for that. So tell us about that.
Okay, so it's on the 24th of February at Old Thorns in Liphook, which is a gorgeous hotel. It's had a massive amount of refurb over the last few years. And we have 140 ladies and two guys. coming for the weekend, and it starts at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then we have about 20 classes, so three classes running at any one time.
Wow.
All the different classes that we offer, plus we go out and research what are the new dance fitness trends or things that we've tried before that we think are brilliant, and we don't yet teach, so that, or they might not be in our area, so we'll bring instructors in to teach that and sort of introduce the new trends to our community. So they choose a number of classes over the day. At lunchtime, we have some speakers. So we have a nutrition lady coming to do a talk. We have another one about general women's health. And we focus on menopause. It depends, all the different things, dietary issues or allergies and things. Another lady coming to talk about makeup and skincare. They're the talks at lunchtime, and then more classes in the afternoon, and then in the evening, an amazing party that we all get dressed up. The costumes are amazing. People really go to town. This year, it's 70s disco, so it's sequins and flares and wigs. The next day, we have a few classes, And that's it. It's a real escape.
Yeah.
It's a real experience to try all the different classes, and it's just a lovely party as well.
We're running out of time rapidly, but I just want to ask you, people can, if they want to book that, they can either go for the full 2 full days or they can stay overnight. Is that right?
They can either come for, they can do a day package.
Yeah.
Or they can come for the 2 days and the overnight with the party. There's more details on our website,
which is
www.surreydancefitness.com.
Brilliant. Well, I'm really sorry we've run out of time. It's been really interesting talking to you. Thank you very much. That was Antonia Bradley of Surrey Dance Fitness, and good luck with the event.
Thank you.
So we're now going to take a very tiny break. Don't disappear, because we're going to be back chatting with Liz Gatherer of Wedition.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Pizza Express Weybridge has a stylish new look. The transformed restaurant draws inspiration from the nearby Brooklands motor racing circuit and aerodrome. Artwork captures the dynamism of Brooklands, featuring biplanes, cars, stars of the circuit, and the supersonic Concorde. The famous Pizza Express menu is as delicious as ever, with lighter and gluten-free options. For younger pizza lovers, the Piccolo menu is full of tasty choices, including create your own pizza. So get down to Pizza Express, 1 Monument Hill, Weybridge. To book your table, call 01932 829 059 or go online at pizzaexpress.com/Weybridge.
Are you selling? Are you renting? If so, your first step is to talk to the team at V&H Homes. V&H Homes is an award-winning estate agency that covers Ashstead, Fetcham, Leatherhead, Epsom and now Bookham. With experienced and welcoming staff, we are an expanding and market-leading agency that you can trust. Call us today to discuss your property requirements and request a free valuation with no obligation. Or why don't you visit our website at vhhomes.co.uk and see what our customers have to say about us. We know you'll be impressed. V&H Homes is extraordinary. Come and see why.
Has anyone ever recommended your business? Imagine if you had an active group of local business owners all promoting your business to their contacts. B&I works for all professions, from accountants to florists, from solicitors to personal trainers. B&I referral groups work. If you are a business owner in Surrey and you are looking to take on more business, B&I could help you to open doors that would otherwise remain closed. Google B&I Surrey and enter your details to arrange a no-obligation trial visit to your nearest group. B&I Surrey, changing the way Surrey does business.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Welcome back to Just Women. I'm Mandy Dynelly, presenting today with Anne Twist, and I'm delighted to welcome our next guest onto the show, Liz Gatherer of Wedition Magazine.
Hi there.
Hi Liz, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be doing what you're doing today?
Well, I was a nanny actually, and was a nanny for about 16 years, and I felt like I wanted a change, and in planning my own wedding with my husband Kai, I spotted a gap in the market and created Wedition, which is a personalised wedding magazine. I style it to the couple's colour scheme and theme, and they can include anything they want in it, perhaps their order of service, their menu, proposal story, couple's photos, and they give it on the day as a favour to their guests. It can also be used as an invitation, and it's really taken off because no one else seems to be doing it, just me at the moment.
Well, they look amazing. They're all.
Thank you.
You've got a few on the table. They look absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you.
They choose the content, or do you guide them?
We work together. Some of my customers, they see the magazine samples that I show them, and they know that they absolutely want it, but they're not really quite sure. Sometimes they say to me, how can I film my magazine? And I say, it's easy, believe me. So a lot of my couples will choose to have, they'll start off the magazine with some couples photos, just their favourite photos throughout their relationship. They might have their proposal story in there. Most of my couples are really keen on the venue that they're getting married in, and they're really interested in the history. So that's something I do as well. I'll research the history of the venue and then write an article for them and include some really
beautiful pictures, but some couples have a really clear idea of what they would like. I had a couple who wanted to include their dog because she couldn't be there on the day of the wedding. It just wasn't practical. So I wrote an article for them from the dog's point of view about how she felt about her mummy and daddy getting married. And that proved really, really popular with the guests. And since then, I've written many articles from the pet's point of view, including Daegus, hamsters, cats, and I've got some goldfish in the pipeline at the moment. So it's really good fun, really versatile what can be included.
I obviously Mandy asked you earlier what you were doing before. I didn't know that until you said mm-hmm. earlier, because I was thinking about this last night when I was looking at your website. I wonder what you'd done before, because the magazine looks amazing. You know, obviously it reads well and the styling's fantastic. I wondered if you'd had a background in, say, graphic design or creative writing, but clearly not from what you've said. But have you sort of brought your own skills to the magazine, or have you bought in?
Well, I'm a very determined young lady, to say the least. When I want something, I try as hard as I possibly can to achieve it. So I do not have a background in graphic design, advertising, PR, everything that comes with running a company.
Yeah.
I'm actually just going with my gut feeling. I'm learning every single day is a learning process. At the very beginning, I employed a graphic designer to help me with the initial design. I also did online tutorials. I got someone to come in and give me some private lessons, and, okay. and now I feel pretty confident at doing it all
Excellent.
Myself.
I mean, you said you spotted a gap in the market. It mm-hmm. was kind of by accident, wasn't it? Because you wanted to do something for your own wedding, and
That's
then people
right.
sort of admired it, and it, you know, then you found the gap in the market that way, I think.
Yeah, well, so my partner Kai and I, we got married at Farnham Castle, which has yeah. got a really interesting history. And we'd been to a lot of weddings where afterwards we looked at the photos and we actually didn't recognise where the bride and groom were. And there wasn't really a connection between the venue and the guests. So I wanted to share the history of Farnham Castle with our guests. And that's how I came up with the idea for the magazine. And, I thought, there's so much more we can include in there. Perhaps we can introduce our wedding party, which we did. Great icebreaker for our guests. And it was so well received by our friends and family. They really encouraged me to try and make it into a business. And I did my first wedding fair in March last year. And just a few weeks ago, I won the national title for Best Newcomer at the Wedding Industry Awards. So
Fantastic.
I'm really
oh,
proud
brilliant.
Of that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's really good. I mean, obviously that now means, presumably, you're going to become really busy. And I was wondering how you're going to sort of scale this up. If you're doing everything yourself, mm-hmm. is that the next challenge, really?
I'm taking every day as it comes. At the moment, I can cope with the workload. Perhaps in the future, I might have to say I'm limited to a certain amount of weddings per year.
Yeah.
I've got at least 30 booked in for this year, but I'm working on 5 at the moment, and their deadlines are due in the next month or so. But I'm coping with the pace very, very well at the moment. But I hope that as the company expands, I will be able to then employ other people
yeah.
and, you know, it'll grow organically. But yeah, at the moment it's fine on my own, but the future might mean I can get some other people to help me.
Yeah, subcontract the creative writing or the graphic design or something, presumably. Fantastic.
Wow. I wish that I had them
Thank
when
you.
I got married. But I'm thinking, what about an anniversary magazine?
Yes. Yeah. So
I'm thinking, yeah. oh, we've got an anniversary coming up. I mean, they look amazing. And I would love to be able to choose the content.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I said earlier about growing organically, and I'm hoping that's what will happen. My customers will start having children
yeah.
and they will come back to me and they will ask me to produce
Birthdays.
Something for the christening, the naming ceremony, birthdays, special wedding. In fact, I have just recently had an inquiry for a silver wedding anniversary. She hasn't booked me yet, but her anniversary isn't till late next year, so there's still plenty of time there. But I've also just done my first corporate version, so that was wow. for Kiko Matthews, who is currently, I believe, on day 5 rowing single-handedly across the Atlantic, which is 3,000 miles. So I produced a magazine for her charity fundraiser, and it included all the auction and raffle prizes, as well as background on her her charity, King's College Hospital, that she's raising money for. So it's really versatile. It's not just weddings. I can do other stuff as well.
How did that come about? That's not a natural sort of connection, really, is it?
So one of the unique things about Weddition is it has the ability to pay for itself. I work with my couple of suppliers and I offer them advertising space in the back of the magazines in return for a discount. And one of my customers' suppliers, Peachy Productions, they do not just weddings, but you know, they set up stages for music events, things like that. And they were helping Kiko organise her charity event. And the lady at Peachy Productions, Olivia, she thought of me and contacted me, and that's how that magazine came about. But I hope from there onwards, perhaps she will recommend me to more clients, and the word will spread.
God, the opportunities are endless, really,
yes,
aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Most people that you've that have bought into it so far, have they gone for kind of the invitation format or the favour on the day or the thank you sort of format?
I find most of my couples have gone for favours, and I believe it's because if you say you're a florist or a photographer, everyone knows immediately what that is. I say I make a personalised wedding magazine and people don't always get it straight away. I have to physically have the product in my hand. And of course, my first few wedding fairs, the Weddition magazines I was showing everyone, they were as favours.
Yeah.
But quite early on, I did get a customer who asked me, could I make it as an invitation? Yes, of course. And since then, since I've shown her some her example magazine to others, I've had more people come forward and ask me to make invitations. So at the moment, most of them are favours, but I can certainly see the invitation side of things is really taking off. I've got a couple of festival weddings I'm doing at the moment, plus I've got a destination wedding too, because of course it's ideal for those kind of weddings when there's a lot of information to give to your guests, such as flight times, hotel choices, menu choices, maybe an idea of what there is to do in the area. All those sort of things can be included very simply in this magazine rather than lots of different bits of pieces of paper, which is often what can happen with festival weddings or yeah, weekend weddings.
What's the print deadline then for...
So I give my customers... Obviously, when you're planning a wedding, it's a really big deal and it takes up a lot of your time. So I say to my customers they should allow about 3 months. That's more for them than it is for me, because I want them to really enjoy the process of collecting photographs and giving me information for their magazine. So I give them a deadline of about 4 weeks before their wedding as to when they should have the final content submitted to me, and then I deliver the magazine between 1 or 2 weeks before their wedding. It depends on the couple and how eager they are to get it, but I don't want them to feel panicked or that it's, you know, they're rushing to get information to me, or that the magazine is going to be printed too late. I make sure everything is done in good time, yeah, for their wedding day.
What's so lovely about this magazine is that it's so personal. And every magazine is going to be different. And mm-hmm, every bride and groom is looking for something authentic at their wedding.
Yes.
And it becomes increasingly more difficult. But nothing can be more authentic than your own personal magazine.
That's right. I've got some examples here with me today, and you can see how different they all are. Some of them are more rustic looking. I've got one that has nods to Disney. I've got a Christmas themed one. So they're all really individual and unique to the couple. And as part of the process, I print off hard copies for the couple to check. So quite early on, they'll give me... I'll know straight from the beginning what colours they want me to use and what theme, if there's going to be a theme. And then I will print one off and send it to them so that they can see how the design is developing. And it's also a good way to make sure that I am using the right colours, because obviously there's many different shades of blush pink and, yeah, and blue and purple. So it's good. They get to see the magazine progressing and they feel that they have an input as well, because they can say, oh, can I swap this page for that one? Or maybe could you change that colour font for me? So I feel like we work on it together a little bit as well.
That's great, actually. And I'm just thinking about the content. I mean, I suppose if people use it as a thank you, mm-hmm. then they can include photographs from the day, can't they?
Yes.
And they've got a little bit more time to play with afterwards then.
That's right. As a thank you, it works really well. You can have, obviously, the professional photographs.
Yeah.
I can do the speeches in there, because quite often you'll be a guest at the wedding, you'll listen to the speech, it's very funny, and then it's all forgotten. But if you have the speech printed in the thank you, especially if it's a particularly funny one, I think it's nice to have it in there. You can have comments from guests, perhaps special memories that they've had of the day. So the bride and groom, obviously, they can't be everywhere at every moment. So it's nice sometimes to contact your guests afterwards and say, can you tell me your favourite thing about our special day? And it can really surprise you at what people remember and what they say. And so as a thank you, it does work really well. I'm still waiting for my first thank you customer to come along. I've had lots of interest in it, but I haven't printed one yet.
That's quite a nice way for the couple to remember the day, though, actually, isn't it? Because they can't be everywhere all at once. So if people are making random comments that then goes into the magazine, that's a good way for them to remember it.
Well, actually, we went to a wedding at Farnham Castle, strangely enough, last year, and the best man read a poem out that he'd written specifically for the bride and groom. And if that was in print, it would be great, because we can't remember it. We haven't recorded it.
That's right,
that's a fantastic idea.
And also, it's quite popular these days to ask your guests to contribute to your honeymoon. So if you use Weddition as a thank you, you can also include photographs and a diary from your honeymoon. And then it really makes them feel even, I suppose, more closer and, you know, to what they've helped, to what they've put their money towards. As a thank you, there's certainly plenty of things you can put in there.
They do look lovely, don't they?
They do. There's so much potential there. Yeah, I was sort of reading all about it last night. I thought, God, this is so exciting.
I know.
And just sort of quickly on costs, it's $399, is that right?
It is, yeah. I'm really undercharging at the moment. Graphic designers keep telling me I really should be charging more. But at the moment, I need to get the brand and the product out there. I need people to recognise what I'm doing. So $399, obviously a lot of that is my design time. I do get some people ask me, can you print? So $399 is for a 16-page magazine, and you get 50 copies. And sometimes I'll get someone ask me, well, can you print less than 50? And I say, well, yes, I can, but it still takes me the same amount of time.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. So that is the minimum price. And I do find most of my couples like to increase their magazines.
Yeah.
They like to have an extra 4 pages. So most of the magazines...
Oh, increase the size, not the quantity.
That's right. Yes, they do. 50 seems to be the right number, because it's generally one magazine between two guests.
Oh, cool.
I mean, some of my customers do order more. I've got a couple that have ordered 70, but most of my couples are quite happy with 50 magazines.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. I think we're running out of time now. It's been really, really interesting talking about this. As I say, unfortunately we're running out of time. So just to finish off, could you just let our listeners how to find you?
Yes, so if you take a look at my website, it's weddition.co.uk, or you can email me liz@weddition.co.uk.
Brilliant. Well, I wish you every success with it. I think it's a really exciting
Thank
concept.
You.
So that was Liz Gatherer of Weddition Magazine. And time now for another quick break, after which we'll be talking to award-winning Helen Matthews about her latest novel.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
I'm so glad you're open.
Thank goodness you're here.
Do you ever close?
Did you know the pharmacy at 20 Church Street, Weybridge is open 100 hours every week to meet your immediate medical needs? We're here for you from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. weekdays, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturdays, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sundays. Our friendly and knowledgeable team can provide you with the advice you need, as well as helping you with repeat prescriptions, all the over-the-counter products you would expect, and if you can't get in to visit us, we will deliver to you. The Pharmacy, 20 Church Street, Weybridge. We're here when you need us, 100 hours every week.
Apple devices and IT systems are a crucial part of modern-day businesses. Any business can be seriously disrupted by unexpected IT failure. If you're a business owner and your company needs Peace of Mind Apple Mac support, please call 07907 795000 or visit www.rafalcookler.com and speak with Rafal, your local Apple certified support professional today. That's 07907 795000 for Peace of Mind Apple support.
Hi, it's Jill Bennett. Why not listen in on Thursday afternoons between 1 and 4? I'll be playing lots of great tunes featuring classic hits from across the decades, news and events in Surrey, and your essential guide to a happier and healthier lifestyle. There'll be a guest each week sharing their experiences. So join me, Jill Bennett, this Thursday on Brooklyn's Radio between 1 and 4.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Welcome back to Just Women. I'm Anne Twist and I'm joined with Mandy Dineley today. It's great now to have a novelist in the Just Women studio. I'm always looking for some book group inspiration. So welcome to Helen Matthews. Great to have you on the programme.
Thanks very much.
Lovely really good to have you here. So Helen, before we talk about the new novel, could you give us a little bit of background into your working life? Because I think it has been heavily based around writing one way or another, at least recently. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. So I've been writing since I was a child, really. But I was always sort of held back from really getting on with my ambition because obviously a crust had to be earned. I had to keep a roof over the head of my family. And it was quite a while before I was able to really spend as much time on it as I wanted to. So I went as long as I could, really, without indulging it, because in the end, I found I wasn't really happy if I wasn't writing. So I reached a stage where my children were at university and I thought, you know what, I'm going to go back to university as well, do a master's in creative writing, detach myself from all of the legalistic and numerical work that I was doing and actually do something creative, because I actually had to take that step.
But you, am I right in thinking you had studied English years ago?
Years ago. Yeah. I studied English, but career took me in a different direction, not really the creative direction.
No. So the MA that you did, was that a year or longer? Or?
Yes, I did the full-time course. And one of the reasons I decided to do that was I thought once I'd given in my notice, I had a very, very good job.
Yeah.
And I kind of could have been tempted with all the pressure they were putting on me to go back to my job. But I thought, no, I will sign up for the course. I'll, you know, put down a deposit on the fees.
Yeah.
And then I've got to leave.
And how long ago was that?
I graduated with the MA in 2012.
Oh, right.
So okay. Just 6 years
six,
ago.
6 years ago.
Coming up to 6 years ago.
Did you live in as a student? Were you sort of there immersed in the
world? No. The sad thing was I studied in Oxford and I live in just over the border from here in Hampshire.
Yeah.
I did think about renting out the house, but my daughter was at university at the time and she was living at home. So it would have been a little bit unfair to just, you know, decamp the whole family and leave her on her own.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. So the new novel, tell us about that.
Right. Okay. Well, it's not the first novel that I've finished, but it's the first one that's been published.
Ah, okay.
So I'd written one novel before I went to do the MA in creative writing, and I knew it wasn't good enough, but I didn't really know how to make it better. So that was one of the reasons for doing the MA.
Right.
And then while I was on the MA course, obviously you have to do a project for your dissertation. And for my dissertation, I started writing another novel. And it was better than the previous one. But again, I kind of had a feeling it wasn't really good enough. It can't have been that bad because I did get my MA. So I persisted with that one for about another year after I'd graduated. And then I thought, do you know what? I need to rip it all up and start again. So this time I sort of went for a subject which wasn't based on my personal experience in any way. And I found that was liberating for me. It kind of opened up my creativity to write about something I had no personal experience of.
I'm glad to hear you have no personal experience
of that. No, I was going to ask, what actually made you choose this subject? What inspired you to write about this particular subject?
Well, the thing about when you start to write about a subject, you know, your mind drifts off in different directions. And I was actually writing a story which actually has gone on to be the subplot of this novel about
a mum who was so worried about the impact that the internet was having on her son that she forcibly stopped her whole family from using the internet, with quite dire consequences for the family, although quite good for the son. And I had a working title for that novel, and the working title was Disconnected. So I was thinking broadly around what would it mean to be truly disconnected, truly cut off. And I read in the paper at the time some articles about modern slavery and trafficking, and I started to research that, because really, how much more disconnected can you be than being in some horrendous slavery situation?
Yeah.
And that's when I started my research, and I realised the novel found me, the plot and the characters.
So the more you researched what was going on, the more inspired you became, I guess.
Definitely. To tell a story. I mean, it's a tricky thing, because obviously you have to be incredibly true to your characters. And if you haven't experienced something yourself, you've got to be ultra sensitive. So I really wanted to create a character who was totally fully rounded character. I don't know if you have seen some films where you sometimes have trafficking victims, and they're very shadowy people. They don't have their life story explained. I didn't want a character like that, so I started my novel in Albania, where my character comes from, and made sure that people understood what her life was like, and that she was a real person, just like you or me or one of our children.
Yeah. Almost saying this could happen to any of us or any of our children.
Indeed. And as we know, it could. People are very shocked about that, but awareness is beginning to improve. People are tending to know a bit more about modern slavery now, and hopefully that will lead to people taking action.
Yeah,
I hope so. I mean, it's such a it's a terrible thing to happen, isn't it? And it's happening all the time. I mean, some of the things that you've written down here, that I was looking at your information yesterday, it's just incredible, isn't it? I mean, you must have found out so many things. Did some of it feel quite traumatic when you found out certain things?
Some of the stories did really shock me. Obviously, in some people's stories, their family or their parents might be culpable. For example, you know, I'm not really talking about a character in my case who came from the utmost poverty, although it's people who come from the poorest background who are, you know, the most likely to fall victim. Yeah. But my character has a slightly better background than that. And her parents, they certainly aren't really culpable. They're just gullible. They don't really realise what's going to happen to their daughter. They're attracted by the idea that, a stranger tells them that she could earn an awful lot of money in London. And, of course, when people are poor, they are attracted by that money and the prospect of escape and a glittery life.
This has led to you being quite involved, I think, in a charity called Unseen, hasn't it, which sort of highlights modern-day slavery.
That's right, yes. Yeah. So my involvement with Unseen came about when I was researching. I've started researching this book in approximately, 2014, probably.
Okay.
And surprising though it may seem, there wasn't as much known about slavery at that time as there is now. And it wasn't that easy to get the information and to get the case studies. But once I discovered Unseen, they were incredibly helpful to me. I was able to ring them up and, you know, get a quick answer if I was researching a particular fact. And then later on, when I'd finished my novel, they fact-checked it for me. You know, they checked the whole thing. And then they were sufficiently impressed that their managing director agreed to write the foreword to my novel.
Oh, brilliant.
Fantastic.
And so really, they've endorsed it. I've partnered with them, giving them a donation from every book that's sold. And I continue to do that now, you know, even in this sort of post-launch period. And recently they've asked me to become an ambassador for the charity. So it means that when I get an opportunity to talk about their work, I just really want to do that, because it's about awareness as much as about raising money.
Yeah,
I've not heard of Unseen before.
Not me.
Are they a UK-based charity or...?
They're a UK-based charity. So where they do the face-to-face work with victims, they're based in the West Country, sort of Bristol area. But they also run the National Slavery Helpline. And this covers the whole of the country. And so if somebody, either a victim themselves or somebody who suspects that slavery might be going on, they can ring this number and, you know, the case can be investigated. So it means that if, for example, you or I were to come across something that we thought was a bit dodgy, you know, but we obviously shouldn't take any action ourselves because it's not only dangerous for ourselves, but it could be dangerous for the victim.
Yeah.
We can ring this number. Shall I say the number or?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
So the number is 0800 000 121 700, and that's the number for the Modern Slavery Helpline, where you can report any suspicions that you may have.
Okay, and I think you, I think I read that you're aware that, you know, hidden in sort of plain sight, you know, I think you went into some nail bars, didn't you, where a lot of people are working who are possibly being forced to work, is that right?
Yes, so the more I learned about slavery and trafficking, the more I wanted to know for myself, although obviously I realised that we're not, like, advised to go out investigating.
Yeah,
but
but you were researching. So,
exactly. Yeah. So the thing about nail bars is that, you know, the ones that are popping up all over the high streets, I'm not saying by any means that all of them are illegal big businesses in any way, but they're often run on a cash basis. The amount of money that they charge for a manicure is about £10, which is about a third of what you would pay if you went to a very reputable beautician.
Yeah.
The women in there often don't speak much English at all. I've tried very hard in going in to speak to the women. That's my main reason for going in. And I've had some very bad some very bad manicures. That is to say, the standard of them's good, but the products that they use are not that kind to your nails. So I really don't recommend them.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that, of course, they're cash-only businesses.
Yeah.
So in some cases, they could be linked with other quite serious forms of crime. For example, there has been known to be a link between cannabis farms and nail bars.
Okay.
So you might have young kids or young men working in a cannabis farm. Obviously, a lot of money comes out of that. How is it going to be laundered?
Yeah.
Potentially, it could be laundered through the nail bars.
So it's happening under our noses.
Yeah, I mean, the other one, I was thinking about this, the other one that I think could be a potential is these car washes, where you go in and you've got about six people working on your car at once, hand over a tenner, and out you go, and that, but rarely do they speak English.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, car washes are very much associated with people from Albania.
Are they?
And I've actually used Albania for the character in my book. And the reason I chose Albania is that it is actually the number one country with the most victims of trafficking into the UK have been identified as being Albanian. However, I have been to Albania, and I just want to say that it is the most fantastic country.
How is it?
The people are wonderful. Mm. It has got everything you could possibly wish for in for a holiday. You know, it's got everything from seaside, it's got beautiful scenery, lovely food, it's not expensive, it's got Greco-Roman ruins, brilliant museums, and it's very, very quickly improving. So I think my point there is that we should all visit if we possibly get a chance, because putting money into the economy in Albania means that the people who live there can get decent jobs, and then they won't perhaps be enticed out of their countries into car washes and other forms of slavery.
Yeah, interesting. So the book came out in October?
Yes, it came out in October 2017. It's with a small press. It's doing quite well. It is available in shops, as well as obviously being available on Amazon.
Kindle?
It's available on Kindle e-reader as well. It's called After Leaving the Village.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned before, there are two plots. The subplot of Kate, she originally came from a village in Wales, and the main character, Odetta, came from a village in Albania, and their paths cross eventually on a London street.
Oh.
So you need to read it to find out.
Me too. My book group are interested in reading this one. Definitely.
This is great news. I mean, one or two book groups that I know have actually read it, and they've said it's great for book groups because there's so much to discuss, lots of themes, because as well as the slavery theme and trafficking, there's the digital detox, which is, you know, where the mum, Kate, has stopped her son from using the internet and playing on his games. How does that pan out, and what does that mean for the rest of us?
Yeah, and this came on the back of your article, The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, I think, didn't it? Is that right?
Well, the way that worked was I was asked to write that article. I think it's for Female First. It's like an online magazine. I wrote an article to coincide with the launch of my book. Asked for that theme rather than the trafficking theme.
So the book came first.
So I'd already done some research. I'd done quite a lot of research. And I was quite pleased to write that article because, again, it's a theme that a lot of people are interested in, yeah. but we don't really know as much as we maybe should know about it.
No, I can't imagine what would happen if I said the family about the internet's going off.
It could be explosive.
Yeah, I think it would be. Actually,
Tara, we depend on it so much, don't we? I wanted to ask you, actually, when you were writing the book or when you finished the book, who did you ask to be your first critiques? Because I see that you belong to a few writers' groups. And would you, obviously, you'd recommend the writers' groups, but who did you let see the book first?
Right. So, yes, I mean, I'm in one writers' group local to here, actually based in Farnborough. And I've been a member of that for quite a long time. And I'm in another one with people that I did the MA with in Oxford. So they help me by like reading sections as we go along and giving me feedback. And then I've got some friends who are what you call beta readers, so they're test readers. It's very interesting. You've got to be so careful who you choose to be your beta reader, because ideally you want somebody who would be a candidate for reading the book rather than somebody who is, say, an English teacher and is going to pull it apart. Because at that stage you want a reader, you know, you improve it as much as you can. And then you want somebody who's a reader rather than a critic. And obviously there are other services. And once I found my publisher, I had a brilliant editor who really helped me to get the story into fantastic shape. So I'm, you know, I'm much more proud of it now. It's been professionally edited. And
that's so good. And you said it's doing quite well. So your publishers have got PR on your side? And
Yes. So there was a publishing... The publisher had a publicity company sort of on standby that did quite a lot of work for me. It was interesting. A few things came up. Obviously, that Female First article.
Yeah.
I did the Bill Buckley show on BBC Radio Berkshire.
Ah, okay.
They placed one of my stories in a Sunday magazine, which was brilliant. Also quite good. And then what I found interesting is little things are popping up all the time. Probably they may have sent out the press releases like 3 months ago, but this very week there was a mention of my book in Stylist magazine.
Oh, fantastic.
Which is the one that I think that is handed out at stations in London.
That's a big magazine.
And it wasn't, what was interesting was it wasn't handed out as a review. It was actually included in a list of things you can buy that include a donation to charitable causes.
So that was the angle.
This is very weak.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
I was really happy to see
as well.
Exactly, because it raises awareness of the charity. Mm. And if people buy my book, then I give a bit more money to the to the charity. Yeah. So it's win-win.
Yeah, it's great.
Definitely.
It's definitely put unseen and out there a little bit more as well today, hasn't it, talking about it?
Yeah, it sounds like a really good book, a really good cause, very, very current, which is, very, very important, isn't it? Well, we're coming to that time, I'm afraid. The end of the programme is just around the corner. So the one last question I wanted to ask you as a writer, not just for this novel, but generally, and I'm sure it's different for all writers, do you sort of know what's going to happen at the end when you're planning the journey to the end, or do you sort of make it up as you're going along?
I do actually start off with an idea of the plot, and then obviously my characters come along, and then the characters take over.
Okay.
So up to a point, you can force them down a certain path, but they might actually tell you that they didn't want to do that.
Okay.
And then the plot will take some different turns if the characters are working properly.
Yeah. I mean, I often wonder this when I'm watching, you know, TV dramas. Do they know the ending so that they can plan the beginning? But I'm sure it's different in every case. So that's all really interesting. I'm sure a lot of budding novelists out there will be signing up for writing courses after listening to today's show. Thank you very much for joining us. Best of luck with the novel. That was Helen Matthews, who is a writer, talking about her latest novel, After Leaving the Village. Thank you, Helen.
Thank you.
Time now to say thank you to our lovely guests on today's show, Antonia Bradley, Liz Gatherer and Helen Matthews, as well as my fabulous co-presenter, Mandy Dynley. And thank you also to Graham Laycock, who has produced the show for us and made sure we didn't misbehave today.
Thanks, Anne. And as always, if you know of someone local who you would love to, who you think would make a great guest on our show, then please get in touch with us by emailing justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with their contact details and a little bit of info about what makes them so interesting. And we'll follow that up and hopefully get them on the show.
Yeah, I think our first hurdle might be sort of convincing them it's not scary and it goes really quickly. And we were all past guests once, weren't we, Mandy?
Yeah, we were.
So if you'd like details of our previous and future guests, take a look at the Brooklands Radio website and follow the link to the Just Women page. We also have our own Just Women Facebook page where we post weekly updates of upcoming guests. So I'm Anne Twist. Goodbye and thank you for listening. And join us again next week for Just Women at 1 o'clock on Tuesday, repeated at 8 o'clock on Thursday.
And it's goodbye from me, Mandy Dineley. See you next time.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.